Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports. Joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host, Lisa Roman, broadcaster and analyst for CBS Sports. On today's episode, we're doing a NCAA College Cup preview. We're going to chat a little bit about the potential NWSL draft prospects in light of the College Cup kicking off. And we're doing that with a special guest. We have NWSL and college analyst and former U.S. Women's National Team goalkeeper, Jill Lloyden. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Hey, guys. I'm super pumped to talk about this. This is exciting. And hopefully, this helps continue to grow college soccer and makes it more visible for these young women and gives them more opportunities to, you know, translate into the professional game.
100%. We're so amped to have you on the show to chat about all things College Cup. Welcome to everyone who is joining us live in the chat. A quick reminder before we start taking a deep dive into everything that you can download and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to us on YouTube so that you never miss out whenever we go live. If you have questions for us, you got to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your question, and Lisa and I will answer during a mailbag segment. Let's hop into it. We've got all kinds of things going on right now across the globe in terms of the world of soccer, but we're going to keep it focused here in the United States with some really excited collegiate stuff going on right now. And we wanted to kind of like merge these two bridges a little bit because a lot of what we've been chatting on the show recently, Jill, is like about like NWSL offseason, like what's been happening in terms of like free agency. We've been chatting a little bit about like what that could look like, as that's a new component that got introduced for the very first time in NWSL. And like watching this expanded format for the College Cup and finally getting to the point where we're down to this final four teams, it sort of like gets in the back of people's heads where it's like, well, we're taking a look at perhaps some players who might make decisions for themselves for that next step in the phase of their playing career. But we wanted to like bring this to you, Jill, as someone who's had a ton of experience in this space as a former player and now someone who's doing the analysis, like the whole concept of free agency to even be within a women's professional soccer league. We just wanted to sort of get your thoughts and your opinions about sort of finally having something like this in the space.
Yeah, I think it was incredibly needed, required, necessary for our league to have free agency for two main reasons, in my opinion. Is one is you get to choose where you want to go, what coach you want to play for, who you trust, who you think can develop you. And you look at somebody I played with, like Amy Rodriguez, and she really struggled when she was in Boston, when she played for the Breakers. And then she got picked up through the Philadelphia Independents and like had this resurgence of her career there. And it's just, you know, personal preference, which coaches you have relationships with, which ones maybe are a little bit more experts in your position, especially for goalkeepers. Having your goalkeeper coach that you believe in and trust in can make the world of difference. So I think free agency is important for that reason, for number one, but number two, for the players to be able to go and advocate for themselves and get a better contract somewhere, whether it's more years or more money. That's really important. This is the way we make money as a professional, and you should be able to advocate for yourself to find the best spot for your future.
Gosh, I love that. That was so well put, Jill. Thank you. I know Sandra and I have been chatting about it a lot, about free agency and what's happening in the league. Kelly O'Hara being the biggest name so far to have taken advantage of the free agency, taking the move from Washington Spirit, going to Gotham and strengthening up the back line for New Jersey, New York heading into this year. But thanks for giving your perspective on that. Now, Kelly O'Hara to Gotham, what do you think of that move defensively?
Well, Gotham certainly needs to figure out the defensive side. Yep. They just were hemorrhaging goals last season. I think upwards of 50 goals.
Yeah.
With Ashlyn Harris retiring, they've brought in a few more goalkeepers, which I think will be really important. And then some experience and some leadership on that back line will be good to help solidify that.
Yeah, 100%. I know the deadline came at November 15th, and I think Lisa and I have just sort of been waiting for, you know, any of those big moves to start dropping. So it's like any single time there's like any sniff of like some news that's been dropped, where we're definitely wanting to chat about it. And Gotham seems to be the front runners in terms of the franchise that's making those announcements or making those headlines. But listen, there's some other organizations and schools and universities who are making some headlines of their own. We're talking about the NCAA Division I College Cup. It's here. It's official. Final four teams who are going to go head to head. It's an exciting time. Get a look at some of these players out there who may make the choice to go pro. And for a lot of people, maybe they might get a glimpse, right, for the first time at some of these players who, you know, if they aren't typically in tune to the college game, these happen to be perhaps some of the more prolific games that folks can have access to or try to watch and check out these type of performances. So it's down to the final four: Florida State University, University of North Carolina, Alabama, and UCLA. Matches will take place Friday, December 2nd. God, I can't believe it's December already. We didn't talk about that in our icebreaker. Jeez. Number one, Florida State University versus number two ranked North Carolina. And then that's going to be kicking off at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then we've got number one, Alabama versus number one, UCLA. That's kicking off at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Shout out to Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary, North Carolina, also the home of the North Carolina Courage. They will be hosts to this fantastic event. Let's chat a little bit about it, because there's a lot at stake in these final two matches. The winners will advance to the NCAA championship that will take place on Monday, December the 5th at 6 p.m. Eastern. Reigning champions, Florida State. Maybe let's start with this game here, FSU versus UNC. Jill, I've got to go to you first on this. You have been keeping a close eye on some of these teams and their colleges just because you've been on the call. Tell me what you're looking for out of this particular matchup.
I mean, I think that this is a familiar matchup that a lot of people in the ACC are used to seeing. I think it's two teams that have a little bit of a different style, especially with new leadership under Brian Penske, a bit more athleticism up top for Florida State. But UNC is just a beast in terms of how hard they press for 90 plus minutes. They make those line changes with lots of substitutions. They use a lot of players over the course of the 90 minutes, and they continue to press and press and press and press. And defensively, they've caused turnovers. They make teams make mistakes. They pick off and they profit from those turnovers to look to go to goal. And then they are an attacking side as well. Really, really special players on the ball, can beat you off of the dribble, can play around, really look to be patient, to commit end line, pull the ball back to runners through the midfield. And we've seen players like Sam Mesa be able to navigate that traffic so well in those tight, congested areas and play those little slippery passes. And then they've got Allie Centenor in the wide area. She can drift centrally. Centenor can come in from the wide area and look to shoot herself, look slip passes. She can expose the space in behind the back line. So Florida State has a tall task ahead of them in this matchup, because UNC can beat you in a multitude of different ways, and they just continually fatigue you decision-wise, but also physically for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's important to touch on that UNC is like mentally exhausting to defend because of like their off-ball movement and I mean everything that you just touched on. But these two programs, North Carolina and Florida State, they're prolific, right? Florida State is the reigning champions of the NCAA tournament. UNC didn't have the best time last year in 2021 in the NCAA tournament. They went out in the first round against South Carolina. So it's a little bit different this year. But Jill, as you talked about, these two teams know each other really well. And fans of the ACC know them really well because they played together. They played against each other all season. Most recently in the tournament final, ACC tournament final, in which Florida State won 2-1. That was their third straight ACC tournament, their ninth tournament championship in 12 years. So powerhouse at Florida State. Like for those that haven't been aware or been watching college soccer, Florida State has been a powerhouse, as has UNC, but Florida State saw Jalen Howell, who plays in the NWSL now, on that winning team last year in 2021. And they have some really top-notch players that they have going for them. Defensively, FSU has only conceded one goal in the tournament so far. So that's pretty impressive to see against this team. Now, you look at UNC, and coming off of their last match, they just beat Notre Dame 2-0. They were quick early goals from this team. Like they got on the board first, they got on the board early, and then they locked it down. So game management, I think, is going to be a really big thing in this match between UNC and Florida State for sure.
Game management. Love to hear it.
I think it'll be important, and to your point, if how much both teams decide to take risks, especially in the opening minutes of the match. And if they're pressing, high pressing, how do they beat that press? And how many numbers are they sending forward? I think Florida State do a great job of keeping the ball and moving the ball through the thirds, which allows their outside backs to get a bit higher up into the attack. And they've got a solid six who can protect the back line, give them a little bit more defensive stability when they do have the ball in the attacking third. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, a bit of a chess game between these two.
Yeah.
Jill, I wanted to ask you with your close eye on some of these Tar Heel games, you know, watching them take down Notre Dame in this previous match, I got to say it was really exciting. I think a lot of folks were maybe looking at this kind of game and that it had a feel as sort of a title-esque type of match between those two programs. What's something out of that game that the Tar Heels, you know, did against the Fighting Irish that they could take into this final game that might maybe give them a little bit of an X factor?
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching the counter movement between the forwards and the midfield. Like the forwards would pop off that back line, draw the center backs of Notre Dame, and that left some space for Talia Della Pruto to really try to exploit. And that's how they found, I think it was their first goal that way. So I think all of their interchange up top and their shifty little movements and their ability to play the final pass, their vision, and their ability to beat players off the dribble, I think that makes them a formidable opponent in the attack.
So I love that we have people joining us in the chat right now live on YouTube. Thank you for doing that. Shout out to Barry, who is actually lives in Cary, North Carolina. He said he's going to be at the match on Monday, the final. And he drops this little nugget. Of course, UNC is going to have a home crowd cheering them on because they are playing at home at Wake Med Soccer Park. Jill, how much of that is a factor in these types of games? Because fans travel to the championships and the College Cup. Like, there's so many emotions going into this as a collegiate player, right? So some of these players are so young, 18, and they're coming into this. So how much of the emotions and being at home or being in this type of big energy game affects it?
I mean, to me, it's not really that important of a factor. I mean, you've got hundreds or thousands of people there cheering and yelling, and I'm sure Florida State will have their own entourage of fans there to support them. But this game already has so much pressure on it, right? It is you're in the College Cup, you're in the Final Four. This is a spot on the championship on the line. It's on ESPN. You got the big wigs, Jen and Julie, calling the game. Thousands of people watching on TV. This game already has enough pressure on it. So surely the players are going to be having to manage that and not really, you know, entertaining too much of what's happening in the crowd. But I think it will feel like a home match, I think, for both teams.
Yeah, I think you could maybe, you know, if you're on the Florida State side of things, you can maybe even use that a little bit to your advantage in terms of like that motivating factor. I mean, they're the reigning champions, and perhaps you can maybe flip the script a little bit and say, like, because these games are taking place in North Carolina, yes, the Tar Heels are this like historic program, but maybe the pressure is on them as maybe, you know, the team that they're perhaps going to have, yes, that underdog mentality and sort of saying like, hey, like we're going up against the national championships, but you're the team that perhaps has the pressure on you as the quote unquote home side, even though that's maybe not necessarily something that you anticipate once you get into these type of rounds. Is that something that maybe as reigning champions, you know, the Seminoles are taking a look at or trying to use to motivate themselves, you think?
I don't think any of those players are motivated by anything other than going out there, giving their best effort and trying their best to win. And maybe it's a factor before the game, but as soon as that ball kicks, nobody's thinking about motivation of like needing that little extra to work harder. Like, these are the best players in our country. This is their job. This is what they go out there and do week in and week out. And so I think it's just, for me, it would be managing the pressure of being on ESPN, managing the pressure of playing for a national championship, and what's their preparation look like before the match, and how are they dealing with those anxieties and those nerves. And then if you do, you know, as a goalkeeper, if you do make a mistake, how do you recover well from that? So I think it's less about motivation and more about just dealing with high pressure situations.
Yeah. And I think emotions, because these are college kids that have, some of them waited their whole career for this moment, right? Their whole lives for this moment to play on the biggest stage that some of them will ever play on or have ever played on before getting to this point. And there are so many emotions going into it, and your families are there and the crowd is cheering. And this is like the epitome of their career, because a lot of them don't go on to play post their collegiate career. So this is it. These are the biggest games they will play in, the biggest goals they will score, the biggest goals they will defend, and they're laying everything out on the line. That's why I love watching these games. Like, it gets me so jazzed up to watch these young kids, because they are young and they are still kids at this point, and they're in college, and this is like the epitome of their fall, and then they still have a spring semester. So it's like everything crashing down at once. And the last semester of your collegiate career is the quickest and the most emotional, and everything is all over the place. It's like a roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm. Think about it too, as like, what if these players do go into the pro game, how many actually get to win a trophy? And in the NWSL, for the their international teams, like, it is far and few between that you actually get to challenge for a trophy of this magnitude this late in your career. So most people never get to challenge for a trophy in college or in the pro level. And so this is their opportunity. And if anything, I think there's probably more pressure on UNC going into this game, because there's such a legacy of championships and wins for this UNC program that I think that if anyone, I think there's more pressure on them.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Let's maybe pivot a little bit and highlight the other two teams who are going to be participating in this big event. We've got number one versus number one, Alabama versus UCLA. That one is the headliner. That one's kicking off at 8:30 p.m. Eastern in Cary, North Carolina. I'm excited for this match. I got to say, there's something about, a program on the rise, right? Sort of continuing, you know, to build what they've been working on throughout the last few years, you know, around a specific core class of players, and I'm eager to see what Alabama can bring to this type of event with the players that they have. How about you, Joe?
Oh my gosh, Alabama. I can say this because I'm not commentating any of these games. I'm a massive Alabama fan. I hope that they take it all. I want them to win. I'm rooting for them. Roll Tide. I've never said that in my life, but Roll Tide.
Alabama, you've got a new fan.
They were the darlings of the SEC this year. They didn't win the SEC championship, but they did win the regular season. And I love their style. I love the way that they play. They look to have possession of the ball, but not just possession to have the ball, but in dangerous territory. And they look to create quality goal scoring opportunities. So they look to dominate teams in that way. And they're so threatening and dangerous in every way. Like, they can get around the edge. They can serve from the end line. They can serve from the wide areas. They look to find Parker centrally. They can create set pieces, which Felicia Knox can just deliver a ball on a platter. They can hit from distance or play these little slip passes in behind. And one thing that I think separates them from most teams is they really like to instigate that press and capitalize on turnovers, like similar to how the OL Reign have profited from that in the past. And I mean, they've got Riley Parker, who's just been an output monster beast. She makes those runs into the box, looks to find space, and she can hurt. The way that she can finish a ball with her head is unmatched, I think, by anyone in college soccer this year.
I love that you're giving a shout to Alabama because this is so well deserved for them. This is their very first College Cup in history. They lost to BYU last year, who ends up going on to the championship, ends up losing to FSU in the final last year. But they're coming into this game off of a 3-2 overtime win to Duke, and they've conceded goals. They've struggled at times to have that bit of consistency, but man, they can score goals. Like, that's one of the most fun things about this Alabama team, is that they know how to find the back of the net. Like, you score 3 goals in the quarterfinal coming into the College Cup to get this. Like, it is so hard to score goals, and they end up continuing to do it. They also have 2 Mack Herman Trophy semifinalists on this roster that they have. Grad student forward Riley Mattingly Parker. She's number 10. She's got some crazy red fiery hair. You can't miss her when you're watching her on the field. And then Rena Reyes, she's a senior. She plays defensive middie. She's pushes up a little bit higher, number 16. She's helped this team defensively a lot, but she also scored a goal in their last match, pushing them into the College Cup. So she can do it on both sides of the ball. This Alabama team is really fun and exciting to watch. Jill, I can't believe you said Roll Tide. I'm never going to let you live that down. But we have to look at the other side of it, too, because UCLA is a team that is ranked number 1 coming into this in the United Soccer Coaches poll. They are a top dog team. They have been running this league and coming into it. They're coming off of a 2-1 overtime win against UVA. They're back to the College Cup for the first time in 3 years. So they've hit a bit of a slump. And for those that are NWSL fans, you know that UCLA lost their head coach at the end of last year. Amanda Cromwell, she entered the NWSL to coach at Orlando Pride. She's no longer there anymore. But that meant that UCLA had a brand new head coach this year, and Marguerite Awazasa, I believe I'm saying that right. She was hired in late December. She comes in from Stanford, where she was an assistant coach for years, 7 years. She won so many titles at Stanford, including 2 NCAA championships. This is a coach that has a pedigree and understands what to do. But to come into a program like UCLA in your very first year and take this team to the College Cup is a tremendous accomplishment, because she didn't draft all of these players. She didn't pick them. She didn't build this team. She was just taking what was put in front of her, incredible soccer players, and molding them to be a team, to be a cohesive unit, to go out onto the pitch and play. But they've got some really good players up top some of their forwards. Sunshine Fontinez, she's number 50. She's out of Hawaii. She is playing tremendous for this UCLA team. But defensively, UCLA is hard to score against. That's why I love this matchup of Alabama versus UCLA, because Alabama is a team that leads the nation in goals. They have 76 goals. They have outscored opponents 76-17 in this year. Like 76 goals? Are you kidding me? For one college team? I love that. And then you look at this UCLA team that defensively is pretty good on their lockdown side. They've got a goalkeeper, Lauren Brisky. She's a grad student. She's won a number of accolades. She leads the conference in goals against average and shutouts and save percentages and wins. She's got a lot of accolades. So I think the anchor of Brisky in goal for UCLA going up against Alabama's attack is going to be such a tremendous battle.
I'm really excited to see these two go head to head, as they're the two teams that both needed to go into overtime to settle out and determine who was going to get their place in the College Cup. Shout out to Lucy saying hasn't seen Alabama play this season, but now I'm really interested in seeing them after that description. Look at everyone. Everybody should just listen to whatever Jill Lorden has to say when it comes to Alabama.
That's why we brought her on here.
Gotta get the folks amped up for Alabama. Roll Tide. Right. So I'm eager to see, you know, and then sort of listening to you rattle that stat off, Lisa, about the goals here with UCLA. I'm a little curious if maybe there's room in the College Cup to have a little bit of end-to-end kind of like bigger score lines. And I'm a little curious to see if these are the two teams that are going to provide that in this matchup. I do wonder if something like going into overtime sort of plays on the legs or the bodies and moving ahead into this one. But I would imagine with the time in between the games and the prep and the buildup to them, that these two teams come kickoff are going to be ready and gunning to go.
Yeah, I think they've had enough rest. And listen, you're never 100%. Like, I can count on one hand how many times I've ever felt 100%. Nobody needs extra little motivation. This is the Final Four. Everybody's just going to go out there and give it every single thing they have. I think that's something that separates Alabama apart from a lot of teams, is they do have a lot of depth, and they are the fittest I've ever seen. They come at you for 90 minutes, constant interchange. Their outside backs are getting high. Whether that's in the attack to help provide in the attack, or just a little bit higher and invert it so that they can pin teams in and defend higher up the pitch, which takes some pressure off of their goalkeeper and their center backs, who are a little undersized, but they'll have a great matchup against Sunshine Fontes, who is, oh my gosh, one of my favorite players in the NCAA to watch. She is so fun. She loves it. I was able to work with her, with our U17s, our U17 national team, and being around her, her joy is just so contagious and infectious, and she just loves playing, and you can see the joy because she's so creative with the ball, can beat players in such a fun way to watch, creative in a multitude of different ways, can hit from distance. And I look forward to watching some of these matchups to see, you know, can Alabama put enough pressure on UCLA defensively to keep UCLA further from goal. And if UCLA can break that initial press, I think there's going to be space for them to play.
You know, I'm really excited just to see even some of these breakout individual performances, right? Because this is when the opportunity for players to, you know, to get their names really shouted out there. And, you know, we've chatted a little bit at the top of this episode about the concept of free agency. And there's some things that are going on in the offseason for NWSL alongside that. The NWSL draft will eventually be here before we know it. That's going to be taking place in January in Philly, I believe, on the 12th. But there's also the Mac Herman Trophy for the college side of things. That is something that is to be determined at a later date. In fact, we're going to have the actual finalists that will be announced on Wednesday, December 7th. And we'll take a look at some of the semifinalists as of right now. And there's a ton of players across this list who will likely feature in either of these games for the College Cup. Some of the names that stand out right away are Alabama's players, whether it's Reyna Reyes or Riley Mattingly Parker, as we've mentioned already, but Jenna Knight-Swanger for Florida State. But there are also players across this list who have been within the overall picture in the buildup to the College Cup, whether it's players who are representing for Notre Dame or Duke. Some really young players on this list as well, whether it's a Corbin Albert out of Notre Dame, sophomore, or a Michelle Cooper from Duke, another sophomore as well. When we're looking at this list of players, it's a lot of talent on here. Does anyone stand out for you, Jill or Lisa, as far as who we might actually see as one of the finalists?
Ooh, I love that question. This is a tricky one for me. I think that one player that deserves a shout on this list is Florida State senior Jenna Nightswanger. She's a forward. She's one of these finalists. She's got 19 career goals at FSU with 34 assists. And this year she has really taken on a leadership role at FSU, 16 assists, 6 goals on the year. This is a player that has been fun to watch her evolve over the years at Florida State. And now you get to watch her in the College Cup, right? But I think it's a little early to tell who's actually going to like be the winner, like really compete for it. I know we're going to find out our finalists coming up in the next couple of days, because we only have our semifinal list at this point. But you said it, Sandra, the shout for 4 sophomores on this is fantastic. So often we only see seniors or graduate students, fifth year players making the Mac Herman Trophy list and honestly winning it, right? Like so often it's some of those more experienced players like Nightswanger. She's one of the seniors on this list.
What about for you? Do anyone stand out, or perhaps maybe anyone that you saw get placed on there and you thought, oh, that's a pleasant surprise?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players. Jada Thomas for Tennessee, who's a young player. Tennessee not having the best season in postseason this year, but she's got a lot of tools. Taylor Huff for Tennessee. Oh, gosh, she's fantastic, like Rose Lavelle-type kind of player. Struggled toward the end of the season, but I think has a lot of tools and really interesting. But, you know, I'm looking forward to these players and watching in the Final Four, and even more so to see and intrigued to see who will enter the draft. Most of these players have a COVID year that they potentially could take. So players like Riley Parker or Reyna Reyes, you're not sure if they're going to go into the draft. So it'll be interesting to see which players decide to stay and which ones decide to go and try to play pro.
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to Fourth Deconstruction in the chat saying, I saw Cooper in the U-17 CONCACAF W Championship. She played well, but time will tell. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Cooper as well. Young player. But we've seen a trend recently with some of these young players making decisions for themselves at this stage in the career. And the way the draft is sort of built up now, with the opportunity to perhaps, you know, put their hat in the ring and get a chance to start their pro careers early. I don't know if that's something that you know, Cooper has in their sights, but we'll see. I'm looking at this list. It's a lengthy list. I would love to see somebody like a Reyna Reyes perhaps, you know, get tabbed for, you know, as a finalist. I think it would be very, very cool to sort of see her in the mix there and even possibly win the trophy. I think it would be really, really big also for Mexican international soccer as well. I believe the last time a player to represent at the U.S. collegiate level and the Mexican international level was Teresa Noyola back in 2011 for Stanford. So I think that would be a really, really cool kind of coming full circle type of moment as well. So we'll have to take a look back and visit and see who ends up being the 3 finalists for this. And of course, we're going to keep an eye on the College Cup and the 2 games and who is going to be our 2 finalists for the NCAA championship title. Everybody, make sure you tune in to the College Cup. It's going to kick off tomorrow, Friday, December the 2nd. FSU taking on UNC at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then we've got Alabama versus UCLA at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And then to follow will be the NCAA championship on Monday, December the 5th. At 6 p.m. Eastern. Thank you all so much for listening and joining us on Attacking Third. Download, follow, and listen to us anywhere you get your podcasts. You can watch us too. Subscribe to us on YouTube to get alerts for whenever we go live at youtube.com/attackingthird. A reminder that if you've got questions for us, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your question, and we'll answer it during a mailbag segment. And we'll be back with so much more. For Sandra Herrera, Lisa Roman, and Jill Lloyden, this was Attacking Third.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flake.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.